Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday for your Monday delivery. Guess what? We're actually getting it done a little bit earlier, too. We want to watch the Super Bowl, just like y'all, or most of y'all. You know, Goes and I once spent a Super Bowl in Japan, so I can see how in other parts of the world, many fucks, zero fucks are given, I can tell, because we were walking around the streets of Japan, just look bar or anything that showed us there was interest in the game. And that taught me that this is a big deal in the United States, but it's not of a big deal in certain countries. I hope you all have a fun Super Bowl day. I don't know if I think the day after the Super Bowl should be a half holiday. What I mean by that is I don't know if everyone should miss the whole day, but at least let people come in at noon because people are going to be partying tonight. And people were partying last night in Houston, including Israel Adesanya, who defended his title. We'll go over that. We got some news nuggets to go over as well. And we'll tighten things up over everything that happened at UFC 271, including our watch along Sunday, February 13th, for your Monday delivery. Because you remember that one Monday, it was like 8 a.m. Japan time, I guess I'll call it. And I think finally there was one bar that kind of had a small TV that had the Super Bowl going on. But like it's odd because it's already the next day in certain parts of the country. It's morning time and it's just a sport that's not really followed. I don't know that would apply to the World Cup. And that's why the World Cup final, I believe, is still the biggest event that's out there. But what are your thoughts?
I roughly remember the game started around 4 a.m. and I think we around 6 or something found some like a little bar or something that was showing it, but it was on our route to leaving, like going to the airport, right?
No, I think we had chosen that day of the fight to walk to the Emperor's I guess what is it, not a castle, but the Emperor's home, the Emperor of Japan. Whoa. His estate. I don't know. Whatever it was, we wanted. Yeah, wasn't it that day?
I thought it was the day we left.
Well, I thought that was the day.
No, the day we left was early.
Okay. Well, regardless, I know it was a Monday, and it was really early. So, there was just nothing to be found. And I think if it was a World Cup final, I think there'd be people out there in any part of the world. It'd be easier to find. I'm not trying to compare the two. I think the Nielsen ratings prove the Super Bowls are the biggest shows, pretty much, with the exception of like the final viewing of MASH and a few other shows that have, you know, that have gotten up there. But it's basically the top 10, 9 of them, 8 of them are Super Bowls. But when you take into consideration worldwide, a World Cup final is up there as well. And I can't tell you how many times I came in on a Monday hungover, just wishing they would make Monday a holiday.
It should be. That's a good point. It really, really should be. Every time there's a presidential election, so many things get said back and forth, and you can kind of make a case for both guys. I just wish that a few things would get thrown out. One is make the day after the Super Bowl. If one guy just came out and said, I'm going to do that, or if one guy said, guess what? You're never going to drop a call ever again. Or your Wi-Fi will never. That might be enough to make me vote for the bastard.
Yeah, really. Even if it was a non-politician, or even if it was, I don't know, the opposite party. Not dropping a call would be nice. How about just stopping spam?
Mm-hmm.
Spam calls. That would be up there as well.
Identity theft people
will always pick up their poop, their dog's poop. their dog poop that gets on my tits as well. We'd have to think of it. But yeah, we need a president to run on that. Israel Adesanya. Well, good luck to the Rams and the Bengals. You know, I was sitting at a drive-thru today getting breakfast, and I started thinking, you know what? I think the Rams are just going to fuck them up. I think the destiny's over for the Bengals. That's what Dad was telling me yesterday. But the Bengals, man, they went into Tennessee and beat them. They were the number one ranked team in the AFC. Then they went into KC and beat them, where it's super tough to win against a solid quarterback. Why should they be scared of SoFi? There's no weather to be tripping on or nothing like that. But, man, like, yeah, I've watched a few things where one of their worst strengths is their offensive line, and one of the Rams' biggest strengths is their defensive line. And Rams got a polished quarterback, you know, good athletes like Odell Beckham and Jalen Ramsey and, you know, Aaron Darnold, just good athletes that I think might be difference makers. So I don't know. I may just root for the Rams today.
We used to do a lot of stun guns on this show, and now we do that over on our Triple G show on Patreon. But can I get an early stun gun in?
Sure.
I want to stun gun Elvis Johnson, and I'm going to tell you why. I don't even know that this is happening, but I just know it's happening. I know at some point today, I am going to text Elvis and say, good luck today. He's a big Rams fan. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to reply with, good luck. Yeah, sucks. I can't watch it. I'm here at work. I don't know how a guy who has worked at the same place for over 30 years, I think he had a little break or something, can't just say, you know what? Big Daddy ain't coming in today. My team's on playing in the Super Bowl. I'm either going somewhere cool, maybe I even go to the game. I don't know. But I'm doing something badass because my team's not always in the Super Bowl. But I know for a fact this joker probably went to work. Guarantee it.
Should have stopped you.
What?
I actually talked to Elvis Johnson. He did take off this day to work.
He did?
He's going to watch it at home. He's not going to go to the stadium.
All right, I'm a stun gun myself then.
And yeah, I guess I should have just stopped you. But if I was him, I would have went to the game.
Yeah?
But that's $10,000 because he ain't going nowhere without his wife. She's got him in some panties. So that's a $10,000 investment from that family. Although I heard tickets got as low as $3,500 just to get in. I would pay $3,500 just to get in. But obviously if Juliet wanted to come with me, now we're talking about $7,000. But she'd probably go, nah, just go and have fun and run into other 49er fans or whatever if I couldn't find anyone to go with, which has been my luck lately. But this is an easy one. A, Elvis Johnson doesn't travel. He's scared to fly. So unless they're playing in that Levi's Stadium or down in San Diego, I guess they imploded their stadium. So when's he really going to be able to do it? He can drive to Vegas, Glendale, Arizona, SoFi Stadium, the Rose Bowl, the one where the Niners play. It's called Levi's. Maybe road trip up to Oregon or Washington, but I doubt the Super Bowl would be there because it always rains. So, yeah, there's not going to be too many. I mean, you got to line up the stadium along with your team making it. This is the one.
This is it.
He blew it. Yeah. I tried to get him to go to the NFC Championship. He wanted to watch it at home. Fucking pussy. All right. Back to Izzy. Israel Adesanya defeated Robert Whittaker yesterday. And it was high speed human chess is what it was at times. But there was some times where they settled into a little bit of a high-level sparring. But I don't think either guy went for it. Neither guy went for greatness. Robert Whittaker should have known that. I'm not going to even apply that old, to take the title, you got to win the title. You got to take it from the champ. No, you just got to win 3 rounds, 10-9. That's it. You're the champ if you do that. But he didn't do that. You got to convincingly win rounds from these judges who can sometimes let you down. And sometimes it's through your lens or the lens of a media or fan. But then when you rewatch a fight, you realize, holy cow, the damn judge was right. So you got to do enough to convince the judges and the media and fans in case you lose, but maybe you're angling for that third fight sometime or whatever. You got to do enough to win those rounds. Robert Whittaker was not doing enough to win those rounds. He thought he won at the end. Jolly old Robert Whittaker. The Reaper, take that name away. He didn't seem like a Reaper. Bobby Knuckles, that's still pretty damn cool, but I wasn't seeing enough knuckles being thrown. He wasn't going after trying to become the champion. He did. Someone didn't instill it in his head. Motherfucker, you're down 1-0 to this guy. If you lose, even though you were 12-1 in the middleweight division coming in, there's a chance you might not get that third shot. Get after it. Fucking cattle prod his ass or something like that. Get after this. This is a chance to win the title. Last time when you lost, you had to beat three killers, and you did, and you impressed the hell out of us. Where was that? It only came out at times, goes not over 25 minutes, and that's not enough over someone as good as Israel Adesanya. Now, on Israel Adesanya's side, he wants to, you know, he's one of the three kings. He feels like one day he's either going to take over Anderson Silva as the greatest middleweight ever, or he already has. He feels like right now he's one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the world. Maybe in his eyes, he might even think he's the guy. You know, I don't know. Him, Kamara, whatever. He didn't go after that type of greatness. You know what I mean? And that's what makes me mad. Maybe I was holding it all in since yesterday, but that's what makes me mad is, and both fighters will probably blame some stories on the media and the fans or whatever. Nah, fools. It was y'all.
Yeah, that's the easy thing to do. I'm gonna read you something, George, that I enjoyed reading. Thought he hit the nail on the head. This is Michael Chandler. Did you read his tweet?
What did it say?
All right. Michael Chandler says, trust me, I love Izzy, but we've gotten to a point where a dominant champ just needs to stand there, throw a few shots per round, and he will not lose unless he gets caught, and he will always get the nod. Izzy got paid on this last contract. Go fight. Don't you dare spar. Then he follows that up with, I'm not advocating banging over tactically fighting. All I'm trying to advocate for is a spirit of inflicting dominance in the face of danger. Don't play it safe. Take more chances. I didn't need you to plod forward with reckless abandon, but you have a little anger in your heart. But have a little anger in your heart.
I agree with a lot of what he said, except that you can still do all that and still be measured enough to hang on to your title without having to knock someone out. Mm-hmm. I thought there was some times when Izzy was starting to go for it, but he did have a high level guy in front of him. He was being careful. I get it. The only thing is, and look, to be fair, Izzy only gave himself a 7 out of 10 in the post-fight press conference. So it's not like he was saying, what's up, man? Where's the respect? But I did hear him say, where's the respect or something. He started tripping on that whole, the interim title is the title defense. You know, so there's times where it comes out of them, and that's when fans and media are like, back off, champ, because you're dope and all. We get you. We're your fans. We're riding with you. You're a gangster at times. You're an assassin. We get it. We're there. But back off with, like, you walk on water too. You don't walk on water. There's times where you don't. And those are the times where we paid 75 at home and we paid hundreds or thousands in the arena. We can say our shit too. And it doesn't matter that we can't do that. What you can do. You know what I mean? So, you know, just back off. And I say that to a lot of fighters that, you know, there's not many that do 10 for 10s, man. There, you know, a lot of them leave something at the door, leave something behind in terms of on fight week, what they could have done better.
I'm on a roller coaster as far as how I felt the night of watching, then thinking about it, then waking up. And this is kind of my stance overall, but it will be for Israel Adesanya. I'm okay with these types of fights, but you only have so many of them. You can't become that guy. Floyd Mayweather became that guy. That was just the guy who showed up every time. I'm okay with certain matchups that maybe, and I know fighters don't like to admit that they're afraid or they're intimidated. I think they all are at some point in certain matchups. I'm okay with this type of fight. I just don't want to see it again. You know, it sucks for fans that showed up and paid that much money. It wasn't that entertaining of a fight. And I know it takes two to tango. I have a little bit of critique for Robert Whittaker as well in that fight. Every great fighter, I think, is going to have this type of fight. You just can't have it all the time. Not if you're going to be acting that you like you have the swag and walking on water, then you can't really have that attitude to go along with that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And fans are a little spoiled, so are media. But hey, we can reach masses really quick with a tweet or with a post. And that's how we connect with other fans. That's how we get our feelings out there. Trust me, before Twitter and Facebook, which I think a lot of athletes and celebrities think, oh, that's their way of expressing themselves to get under our skin. Well, you either elected to follow us or you follow someone that retweeted us. I don't know. But trust me, if there was no social media at home, that's what we're saying at home. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Goz and I are publicly going to put this out for thousands to download. But at some point, he's going to hear this from me, you know, throughout the week or whatever. And so are others that are going to communicate on the phone or when they get together for beers or something like that. The water cooler on Mondays. We're all thinking the same shit. We all as humans have kind of been conditioned to expect certain things. A few years ago, the Rams and the New England Patriots played a Super Bowl. I think the final score was 10-3. None of us walked out of the Super Bowl parties going, hoo, 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 one for the ages. No, Tom Brady got his ring. Respect. The Rams laid an egg. You know, what can you do? And so, yeah, it was worthy of some criticism, you know, like, oh, but the athletes want us to say, but the defenses rose to the occasion. You know, it was tough to knock out Whitaker. It was tough. Maybe so, man. Maybe so. But y'all did this to us. When you're fucking people up, we think you can do it all the time. Or at least show us that you kind of want to mess the other guy up. And I thought there was times where these guys were hitting 120. I thought Izzy, okay, we'll say the fastest the car can go is 120 miles an hour. I don't want to go up to 200 and 150, you know, just 120. 60's legal, 90's like speeding, you know, like the teenagers are doing it on the weekend. And 120 is like, you're a pro, we'll say. You're a pro. All right. I thought Izzy was hitting 120 at times, goes, but then he'd go back down to 90, and then he'd get down to 60 and play it safe. He thought he saw a couple cars, some radars, some cop cars. And then as far as Whitaker, I thought he was mostly at 60, hitting 90 at times, maybe when Izzy was down to 60. But he never went 120 to win the title. And Israel never diverted from going less than 90, hitting that 90 or 120 range at some point where he's just greatness. I only lost to Blachowicz because he was bigger and I didn't plan for his wrestling. But other than that, you can't stop a motherfucker that weighs 185 or less than me on this planet. Mm-hmm. And then there was times where we kind of slowed down, and that's why he was kind of losing a couple rounds or whatever. So he has to take those on the chin. You know, that's just something like, GSP, as much shit as we gave him for not finishing, he rarely lost rounds. Khabib rarely lost rounds. It may not have been as exciting, but that's one thing we could back off and go, fuck, but they kicked their ass. You know, I didn't get the finish, but man, someone got mauled like a tiger, you know, a tiger mauling a fucking hyena or a little deer or something like that.
But they didn't trot around trying to make you believe that they're exciting either. That's the difference, right? So with Israel Adesanya, when you look at the performance, yeah, he did what he had to do to win, and I get it. If you look at the press conference, all right, if you didn't watch the fight, you would have thought Robert Whittaker was the one that won. He was in a great mood. He's laughing. He's joking. Israel Adesanya kind of had like a chip on his shoulder, and I think he had it because I've never really seen him be like that. I've actually praised him for the complete opposite. I think he's one of the coolest cats, like really down to earth, but he seemed annoyed with questions that were being thrown his way. And I don't think it's the questions that annoyed him. I think the performance probably really bothered him. So yeah, I think you're right. We're not going to see that again. I'm guessing we won't ever see it again.
I think you're right. I think sometimes they take it out on others when in reality they're displeased with themselves.
Could be. Yeah, he could have maybe jumped on social media and saw the reaction that he had been getting. And then that probably combined with how he fought. Yeah,
the first question annoyed him, which was from John Morgan congratulating him on his fourth title defense. He says, no. And that's when he got started. He goes, this is my fifth title defense. And I thought, okay, is this a bit? Is he going to kind of smile and wink at John? I'm joking or whatever. No, he's serious. What he's saying is he was an interim champion when he beat Calvin Gastelum. And then when he unified versus Robert Whittaker, interim title was a title defense of his. Now, you can break it down in many ways. The way he broke it down, okay, I suppose they were there to unify. So it was like, if you look at it in, I'll lay down my belt, you lay down your belt, kind of like two cars with pink slips. And at the end, the winner grabs both, which they do in car racing. But in this case, you kind of still keep your title. You know what I mean? Like, Robert Whittaker didn't really want his interim title. He was probably kicking back going, I was fucking injured. Like, I still think I'm the undisputed champion because I got the belt. So, yeah, we're going to call it a title unification, but really it's more about Izzy trying to gain the undisputed. It's not really about him defending that and Robert wanting to take that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know that he can really, really go to bat with that one, with the historians, with the hardcore fans, with the record books. You know, I just don't know that if he's really, really going to gain that one.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're going to have to rewrite a lot of history. I'm pretty sure we're going to go with that was your fourth title defense. Respect. That's a nice number. I can pull up some names that have reached there. The four or five marks, like Valentina, Tito Ortiz, Frank Shamrock, Pat Miletich, I think. Matt Hughes, I think, is like at six or seven. Chuck Liddell. Well, no, I can't remember if Liddell made it to that far. He may have. But there's quite a few names that I just named off, obviously. You know, I didn't even get to the Aldos and GSPs and Andersons and Demetrius Johnsons of the world, John Jones, but Stipe Miocic. So he's in fine company at four. You know what I mean? But so that got things started. And yeah, you could just tell he was a little pissy.
But there's an argument to be made on both sides of that. And that's why I felt like the word that he chose, disrespectful, did not apply to that. You know, if you tell somebody they're being disrespectful, that's kind of like one of the worst things you could be as a human. And I think that's where a little bit of the ego kicks in, you know, and you feel like things that are normally put out there where a normal Joe Blow would just go, hey, man, I disagree with you. Now you feel like I'm being disrespected. Do you know the fuck I am? That's the part that kind of bothered me a little bit about Izzy in that post press fight conference, because I don't know that John said anything wrong, and I feel like a lot of people would probably agree with John. Now, when Izzy lays out his explanation, it's not the weirdest thing in the world.
Right.
I don't think it's right, but it's not strange, and I understand why he feels that way. But to use the word disrespectful, that's saying a lot, and I think he just chose the wrong word, and you could just tell he seemed kind of frustrated.
He did, and again, and this is why I'm so lucky. We're so lucky that we get to meet these people when they're just people like us, before they're super famous, super rich, super egotistical, super powerful. We met Izzy before he was in the UFC. He was in our studio. 2 years later, he was the champ and everything. He did everything really, really quick. But he seemed so grounded, so kind, so nice. He wasn't as rich then as he is now. But you can tell there are a few changes, and I get it, man. He's young. He's got that swagger. He's the champ. He can do that. People, you know, there's a lot of people that throw rose petals at these guys' feet, these guys and gals, for what they do. But with it just comes a bigger spotlight, and we're all going to watch everything you say and do. And if it doesn't conform with what we've seen from past combat sport elite, with the way they act, with the way they perform, and even then, what some of us, because not everyone's a fan of sports outside of combat sports, but I see the greatness from the athletes in so many sports, then guess what? I'm going to speak up and say what I'm going to speak up, you know, and a lot of them aren't going to like it, but I'm not the only one, and they should start getting used to it, and they'll start, you know, they'll start hearing it from other people. Look at poor Aaron Rodgers was the MVP this year in the NFL for either like the third or fourth time. And you would honestly think, goes, that this guy is like the most hated guy in football, or maybe number two to Antonio Brown. He's just had a rough year, you know, because of everything he went through with this vaccination stuff and then the cover up, and then whether he's going to retire, whether he's going to leave, you know, whether he gets along with his teammates, all that shit. It's just a big spotlight that comes with that. And I think fighters just need to remember. All athletes need to remember where they came from. Stay grounded. Keep it real. Keeping it real goes so far.
It does. It does. I know it sounds like we're coming down on Israel. He's actually one of my favorite fighters, not just because of the way he performs in the cage, but the way he conducts himself outside. I think he just had a bad night, man. I don't know.
Like I say, at times, he was throwing some really, really nice strikes, innovative strikes. There was this one knee that he threw that it was like, almost like a question mark knee, or like a hook, like a hook in boxing. He kind of threw it like at a weird angle, and then he followed that up with a punch that was really, really nice. there's not too many people that have that kind of hand-eye coordination and can pull that off in a fight. You know, he was trying to really, really hurt Rob. He threw some nice kicks to the head that Rob was able to deflect. Some would get through. He was going for it. But, you know, he didn't get the finish. And when you have some rounds that where things slow down a little bit, like I say, his competition mostly is Kamaru Usman, John Jones, Khabib, GSP. At this point in time, I know that he's also chasing that. Every fighter is, man. Every fighter wants to be known amongst the greats when they reach that status. They bring it up too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I agree with a lot of what Chandler said. Chandler unfortunately puts himself in a position where a lot of people are always going to, you know, hit him back. And I saw some of those comments, and those are unfortunate as well. But again, those are mostly little twats at home that kind of just they go and hate on everyone. I respected his opinion. I understood, you know, what he was saying. If I were to hit back, I'd say, well, you know, some of that reckless, it's a balance, man. It's just a fine balance between the recklessness and the measured fighter. Because I think Chandler, if he beats Gaethje, which he was beating him early on, but if he finishes him and now he's 2-1 Chandler, with his only loss being Charlie Olives, the guy whose ass he was kicking in the first round, and everything he's done over at Bellator, I think people will treat him a lot different than right now. He's 1-2, and he's lost his last two. And, you know, a lot of people are going to point to the way that he may have been, you know, a little foolish in round three and kind of getting away from being measured and precise and possibly winning the fight to just being reckless and everything. And now he gets lumped up and into another category fighter, which he really is not. He's actually, as a human being, pretty measured in the decisions that he has kind of made along the way. But unfortunately, I think Chandler also takes that type of criticism hard, whether it's MMA media or fans.
Right.
Okay. So Izzy, what's next for him? I think Dana White made it clear. The worst kept secret ever. Cannoneer's next, which was the winner of the Cannoneer Brunson fight. And I guess we'll just skip to that fight and then come back to Taito Ibasa and Derek Lewis. We'll just kind of put a bow on middleweights, even going back to Strickland over Hermanson. So had Strickland done what Cannoneer did, I believe, and had Cannoneer won the way Strickland had, Strickland would have a chance to have leapfrogged Cannoneer. But that didn't happen. Strickland coasted to a victory, similar to like Israel, I guess, in a way. He saw what was working and he stayed with it and got out of there with the W. Whereas Cannoneer, when he saw that opening, he went for it and he elicited something from the crowd at H-Town, in H-Town, the people at home, the promoter feels it, the promoter sees it. And that's what locked it up. You know, he's next. He even said so against Israel Adesanya, and Israel Adesanya already went out and said, "Hey, I heard they haven't got June booked. I'm in." I love hearing shit like that. That I'll give him a plus on.
Yeah, I thought it was a good performance for Jared Cannoneer. You're right. He would have leapfrogged. Sean Strickland would have leapfrogged had that not happened. But I don't know. I thought it was a good performance from Jared Cannoneer, but nothing in that performance showed me that he has anything for Israel Adesanya. Really, the guy that I think would give Israel Adesanya some problems would be kind of like a younger Chris Weidman, somebody that's got a really good grappling forte but can also bang a little bit. Maybe even a Luke Rockhold back in the day, someone like that, I think could maybe give Israel Adesanya some problems. But right now, I think the coast is clear, man. I think this guy eventually, I think he'll keep winning, and I think eventually he might surpass Anderson Silva.
Still a ways to go. This is number 4. Anderson Silva got to number 10, if I'm not mistaken. GSP was at 9. Aldo was at 7. Amanda's at 7. Hughes was at 7. I think that's what it is. Still a ways to go. And I think he can do it for sure. The Izzy that beat Whitaker the first time, this one's better. And I'm saying that about the guy that won by decision versus the guy that finished him, you know, in the first one. Whitaker was also better. But yeah, Israel Adesanya, look, when he got taken down, he popped back up. That's something that did not happen in the Błachowicz fight. Now, that was a different sized man that also took him down in the Błachowicz fight. Izzy is shoring that up. He's still getting taken down, but he's popping back up, which was nice. And Israel Adesanya definitely has it in him to get six more title defenses, which would then put him even with Anderson Silva. And, you know, one last thing here. Again, you heard me mention Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre and a few others. They got critiqued too, folks. This isn't us having a go at Izzy or anything like that. There was just some fights where we would come in on a Monday, or in this case a Sunday, and just go, well, that was cool, but you know, I've given him a few tens, but look, I'm just going to give him a seven or an eight. Frankly, I think I would have given Adesanya an eight, honestly. He gave himself a seven. I'm giving him about an eight. That's just the way it is. Surpass Anderson with, you know, 211. I guess it's possible, goes, but that's such a long way to go. And now these guys get paid so much money. I don't even know. Some of them kind of want to dip in and then dip out. I don't know.
You don't have to match him for numbers, though. Like, really, if you look at just the level of competition, you could always catch him that way. Like, Kamaru Usman hasn't caught GSP, but really the level of competition, the way he's been doing things, you never know, man. He might just catch him quicker. I don't think he's going to need to do that, because if you look at Anderson Silva's record, he has some good wins, but he's also kind of got some dookie wins on there, too. So I don't know. I mean, if Izzy keeps having to face killer after killer, he might catch him a little earlier. I don't know that he has to actually match the number.
Speaking of the fight itself, where was Whitaker's game in the last three rounds, in the first two rounds? In 10 minutes, he tried to take him down once.
Mm-hmm.
In the last portion of the fight, he tried to take him down way more times. Where was that pressure and where was that wrestling early on? I think if he would have done that, he would have had more of a chance at winning the fight. He couldn't win him the fight with a 25-minute kickboxing performance. It had to be a balance of wrestling and striking. That didn't show up in the first 10 minutes.
I think it was a mental thing. I think, you know, he said in the post-fight press conference that he didn't even watch the first fight. I think he just wanted not to survive, but maybe not go through the same thing he went through that first time. I think he wanted to get through the first two rounds and, you know, obviously try and win the rounds. But I think deep down inside, it was just a block that he had to get through. I think he woke up in round three.
This is how close he came to winning the fight, goes. Robert Whitaker in round two, I remember him getting a takedown and the striking was like 11 to 10, if I'm not mistaken. In that fight, if Douglas Crosby and Jacob Montalvo agree with Mike Beltran and go, hey, let's give it to Whitaker and write a 10 down instead of a 9, he wins the fight. And I'll tell you why. Because Crosby and Montalvo both thought he won 4 and 5. So Crosby and Montalvo would have all had 48-47 Whitaker over Adesanya. And that round two goes, you and I were considering it during our watch along. Mm-hmm. I know people on Twitter were considering it as well. A lot of people, you know, they show up on the broadcast. Who's scoring and how and where or whatever. I remember even Kevin Ioli saying, you know, that one was close and Whitaker looked better, but I'm still going 10-9 Whitaker. So you could tell even he was close to writing it down just a little bit more. And that fight is his. I think too many fighters are looking at it as round one, minute one, minute two, minute three, like, yeah. I'm setting things up for what's going to happen towards the end in minute 20 or 22 or round four or round five or the middle of this, the championship round. No, each block of 5 minutes is super important. And when there's this feeling where the round is up for grabs, like a lot of us are thinking of at home, and I get it, you're in there, I'm not. So your mind is probably on something else, which is don't get removed from consciousness. Don't become a highlight film. Don't get caught. And now all of a sudden you're a meme because your eyes are rolling back and you're splattered on the ground. Your coaches could be saying stuff to you. You say you can hear everyone, your coaches over everyone in the arena. You tell us all these things, you know. A lot of fighters tell us that they realize certain things are happening. So some are able to get it together. And I got to believe that the best in each division are usually able to have those types of attributes as well. That's how close Whitaker came to winning that round, that if those two judges agree with Beltran, remember, Beltran gave him round two. Mm-hmm. If they write it down, Whitaker's the champ. Now, Beltran, that's the only time he thought Whitaker won. He gave the rest to Adesanya. But only round two did he think that. And then the other guys who gave him four and five, had they thought the same in round two, Whitaker's the champ.
That's crazy, right?
Crazy, yeah. Because yeah. I thought over 25 minutes, Israel Adesanya had expressed himself more as the better fighter than Whitaker had. Because a lot of those takedowns were takedowns. They weren't with any form of domination, like the ground and pound. The elbows were raining down. The submission attempts. He passed into a dominant. But no, there wasn't really any of that. There was scoring, but there wasn't that type of domination that I was talking about. He wasn't hitting 120.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, I got to take a deep breath here. So at the same time, kudos to Cannoneer. Brunson is still saying one more and I'm dipping out. All right. I just wish you wouldn't have shared that to begin with, because I know how the UFC can be. I don't know if they would have matched you up in the title fight had you won, especially if it was boring. They may have given it to Strickland because he's going to stick around and you're saying you're not. But that doesn't make you dislike a fighter or anything like that. I've always enjoyed Brunson. Whatever his next fight is, I hope it's in his home state. If the UFC is traveling again in North Carolina somewhere, and maybe he even gets the headline of a fight night or something like that. But there's really no reason to match him up with any other killer. You know what I mean? Just maybe a grizzly veteran that's also on his way out. Maybe Rockhold or someone that's kind of been shunned a little bit off to the side. Yeah, let's put you two together and that'll be that. All right, now we're gonna go back into the co-main event. Tai Tuivasa defeated Derek Lewis. I like both guys, goes. I love it. I love seeing them shoeies being done by Tuivasa on the cage. I love seeing the fans doing their shoeies. Everyone at home's doing shoeies. The shoeies is an amazing thing. It's gross, but it's amazing the way it just can take over a whole card. Now the guy's got a product and he's going to make some money. I think he finally did one with Dana White. That's cool. But not at the expense of my dog, man. I really like Derek Lewis. He's the knockout king. Derek Lewis had gotten a takedown, which Derek Lewis would critique other fighters for wrestling, but he put his ego to the side. He got the takedown. Didn't do too much with it other than once he had him there, he started knocking his block off. And I thought that was going to be the beginning of the end for Tai Tuivasa. But Tai Tuivasa got up, got back to his feet, swung back, and then he found an opening later in the fight with these vicious elbows, man. And he took Lewis out. He stole the show. And guess what? He kind of won over the crowd because that was Derek Lewis's crowd. But the crowd popped nice for Tai Tuivasa when he said, "Houston, what up?" or something like that.
You rarely see things like that happen. Usually the hometown crowd can be pretty bitter. But you saw those elbows throughout the night, really. And what made that one unique is, I don't know if a lot of people noticed this, but he used his left hand to hold his head. And then came in with the elbow. And what that does is that there's no give on the shot. So your head absorbs, your head and your chin absorbs 100% of that shot. So that's kind of like when people talk about the knees to a grounded opponent. What scares people is that somebody can get their head in between the cage and that knee. And with no give, that could be a really bad thing. So if you look at Derek Lewis's head, there was no give. He took all of that elbow, and you saw it, the way he face planted. Pretty, pretty, pretty brutal shot.
Luckily, his hands and forearms kind of broke that fall. Mm-hmm. The front part of the skull is the hardest part of the skull, but I've seen a lot of people flip face plant like that and injure themselves even further. It's just additional head trauma. That luckily didn't happen, but it didn't mean that the fight wasn't over. Tai Tuivasa recognized it, no follow up from him, and it was one hell of a fight. That's kind of what we expected. I mean, we all said, anybody that broke down the fight, yeah, this kicks here and a hook here, and you know, power shots here, yeah, but everyone would finish. I know this thing. Somebody got knocked the fuck out. You know, it was Derek Lewis, and all the spoils go to Tai Tuivasa. Western Sydney's in the house. Now, what's next for him? I don't know, because that division's such a mess. You got the champ, who's probably out for the rest of this year. He's going to have a surgery next month that'll kind of keep him out, like most athletes, for 9 months. If you have a surgery in March, you're either fighting at the end of December or probably just early 2023. So now what do you do? Well, they didn't hesitate to do an interim title last year after him being 3 months on the job and healthy. So they'll probably do something. And John Jones hit the nail on the head. He went right after Stipe Miocic, and he said, let's get this thing done. And the smart thing is whoever's interim champ, aside from it being a title defense, will get pay-per-view points. Mm-hmm. If and when they fight, when they unify versus Francis Ngannou. Could that be tied to Ivasa? Well, I'll tell you what, goes. If Jones or Miocic can't agree to terms, the UFC can play that card. We tried, but we couldn't. It's such a simple statement. We were looking to make Jones and Miocic. That was being considered. You don't say that was our number one. I think the UFC doesn't like to pigeonhole themselves into, like, you know, box themselves into a corner by saying something. So you can use these loose terms. Hey, man, why is Tito Ivasa fighting Jones or Miocic? Well, look, we were looking at our options, and yes, we explored Jones versus Miocic, but we just weren't able to come to terms. Well, can you define what comes to terms? Well, you know, it's different in many cases. Sometimes they're just not ready to fight. Sometimes financially we don't agree on terms or whatever, and that's all I'm going to say right now. You know, there's ways where you can still communicate it, but not act like you're talking to a bunch of fifth graders, and we'll all just kind of go, okay, we get it. You know, we get it. Either you guys were being unreasonable or maybe it was them, but at least we know that you exist in the same world as we do, where that fight should have been considered, and it was. Okay, it didn't happen. Now it's Tuivasa versus Miocic or Jones. Fine. And Tuivasa's looks so good that not many people are going to go, what the fuck are you doing? You're crazy. You guys pulled Tuivasa out of your ass. No, he just won five straight, and he beat a guy who's got a lot of quality wins in Derek Lewis. So he's in a perfect position, Ty Tuivasa is.
He is. You know, he kind of mentioned that he wants to spend some time with the family. His kid's going back into school. But I think that can all be changed with some dollar signs. And if I'm the UFC, I mean, this is maybe a little evil or whatever, but I don't know that Stipe and John Jones, I'm down. I want to watch it, but I don't go crazy over it. And what I'm getting at is, if it wasn't Jones, if it was Stipe and Tai Tuivasa, or even if it was John Jones and Tai Tuivasa, I wouldn't be that much more excited. So really, if the UFC can kind of have that as a threat for either guy, because don't forget, Stipe Miocic hasn't always been easy to deal with as well in right. negotiations. If I were the UFC, business-wise, I would bring that fight to John Jones and Stipe Miocic. And the first one that gives me any shit, I would just switch it, and I wouldn't even say anything. And I'd make Tuivasa the opponent and have them read that in the news and just let them know, well, we don't mess around, dude. All right, you're either going to fight or you're not. There are other guys that want to do it. I think that'd be a good time to make that type of statement because I don't know. I honestly don't see John Jones and Stipe happening. I can almost promise you that won't happen.
Take it easy, Commodus Caesar.
George, if they couldn't do John Jones and Francis Ngannou, how the hell are they going to do Stipe and John Jones?
Like, I agree with what you're saying. The only thing is I would go to them. And if they said no, I would put out the rumors that we're now talking to Tai Tuivasa. I wouldn't just go make it. I'd give them a scare, but let them know we have options. But I don't know that I just go make it and not tell them. Because in your heart of hearts, I think you really want Miocic versus
But Jones. That's what I'm getting at, is I don't know that you do. Did you see the pop that Tai Tuivasa got? How excited people were to see him? Like, I don't know that one's really that much better. I mean, it could be that it's better.
But you have to respect your rankings a little bit. You have to respect your rankings and the hierarchy.
But you gave him a chance, right?
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, then maybe just be transparent. Look, you two are our first option, but if we can't agree to terms, we're going to pursue this two-way fight. So here's your ticket. Fly to Vegas. Man up. Eye to eye. We're either getting this done or not. You know, and then you can fly back to Cleveland. You can fly back to New Mexico. And we'll catch you on the next round of big fights involving you in this division. But we're going to move on, and that's that. That can't be any more childish than what happens nowadays, right?
Right.
So I would do something like that. And if I'm Tai Tuivasa, and I'm not telling you don't love your kid, don't love your kids if you have kids, but it's really important for either Jones, Miocic, Tuivasa, or whoever else I'm leaving out, to get into a title interim title position because of those pay-per-view points you stand to make when you unify against Big Man, Big Fran. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Why would you want to face Big Fran making $300,000 to show, no win bonus, $500,000 to show, no win bonus? That's great money. I would love for someone to give me a check like that. But why would you want to do that when you can do $300 with pay-per-view points? Even if it's just $1 pay-per-view, I don't know. If you guys sell $500,000 pay-per-view, well, that's an extra $500,000. If it's $2 pay-per-view, that's an extra $1 million. You know, whatever it is that you can negotiate. Why would you not want to do that when you unify versus Big Fran, then just face them without that? You want to, right now is a perfect time to create this interim title. And I know that pisses Francis off, except I think it pissed Francis off more when he was a healthy champ and they did it 3 months after his reign started, only because he wouldn't fight 1 month earlier than they wanted him to. That's what pissed him off. Now I think he can accept, all right, I get it. My ACL, my MCL, I'm out till December. I get it. That I get, you know, and I think even Francis would, he'd be on board. Derek Lewis, what's next for him? The beauty of Derek Lewis is he's just always down to fight, and you can kind of – it's been proven. You can throw him in there against the high-ranked guys, Blades, Ngannou, Cormier, Late Notice, Volkov, Cyril Gane, whoever, doesn't matter. Or you can get him against the guys that are the next tier down, or even against the young guys that are trying to get put over. He's always down to fight. He just wants to get paid. The one thing I would tell Derek Lewis – is I just still politely and respectfully disagree with the stance of I'm only here to get paid. When the questions used to come up about winning the title when he was on these win streaks, that was your avenue to get paid. If you became champ, you get the pay-per-view points. You're getting paid a lot more, maybe even four times more than what you would get paid in a fight. So as long as you were putting forth the best effort to try and win those fights, then okay. But sometimes his answers led you to believe like every training camp's the same. Every non-training camp's the same. I'm just here to fight. Like nothing special was being done as his career progressed and he was getting that close. I think that's when you take it up a few notches. That's all people want to hear, even if you're lying, I guess. But when media are asking, you know, like what stands out, you know, these matchups, these are bigger names. Well, no, I'm just here to get paid. I'm just here to get paid. I don't know. I hope that window hasn't closed for Derek Lewis. It's not like he didn't have great moments in this Tai Tuivasa fight where we could be talking about him fighting for the interim title against John Jones.
I honestly don't know what to do with him at this point. Definitely some rest. You know, if you face plant like that, he's a pretty active fighter. I think he needs some time away.
I agree. All right. So the rest of the card went as follows. You guys probably already know this stuff because if you tuned in the post-fight show, John Morgan went over it. But I know some people are in bed by the time all this happens, you know, or you only have so much in you. So, Renato Moicano defeated Alexander Hernandez. Nice submission, rear naked choke there. Bobby Green defeated Nasrat Haqparast via decision, 30-27 across the board. Andre Arlovski defeated Jared Vandera via split decision. Casey O'Neill defeated Roxanne Modafferi via split decision. I thought she was more dominant than for it to be a split decision, but whatever. Roxanne Modafferi left her gloves in the ring. I think you all knew pre-fight she was retiring, and she definitely followed up on that. This was it for her. Kyler Phillips defeated Marcelo Rojo. Carlos Ulberg defeated Fabio Charant. Sorry, Ulberg won by unanimous decision. Phillips defeated Rojo by submission. Ronnie Lawrence defeated Leomana Martinez. I think we're all more used to calling him Mana Martinez. Unanimous decision there. Jacob Malkoon defeated AJ Dobson. Douglas Silva de Andrade defeated Sergey Morozov. Jeremiah Wells defeated Mike Mathena. Mike Mathetha. And Maxim Grissom defeated William Knight. A lot of decisions. The fight of the night was De Silva versus Sergey Morozov. The performances of the night went to Tai Tuivasa and Jared Cannonier. You know, goes usually these main events between two high-level fighters, Even if we're coming in here and going, it was a chess match, it was tactical, they usually get fight of the night. And notice they didn't here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit of a statement, I think.
Promotion's a little bit in agreement with us. Y'all went 120 at times, but you guys kind of downshifted gears at times as well, and we kind of recognize that. So the attendance in Houston, do I have those figures? I don't think I have those figures. It looked pretty full to me by the time the fights went down. You didn't really see any empties, so I would probably call it a sellout. In fact, Daniel White was asked, why do you keep coming back to Houston? He said, Tillman Fertitta, who I believe is a cousin to the Fertitta brothers, the guys that were his partners, I think is the owner of that arena and the Houston Rockets, and he was saying, man, Texas is wide open. Come down here. So the promotion, obviously, has been going to Texas a lot because it's easier to navigate around COVID. But in that answer, he said, and look, I think out of the top five gates ever in that arena, was it the Toyota Arena or something like that? Mm-hmm. They own four of them. So I'm just going to assume it was right up there with that, a sellout and a solid gate. Good for them. Next week we have Johnny Walker versus Jamal Hill back in Las Vegas at the Apex Center. I think that one was supposed to be Dos Anjos versus Rafael Fiziev. And what happened was Fiziev had some visa issues, so they moved Dos Anjos versus Fiziev to UFC 272 on March 5th. So now that card got an extra little pop there. And then these guys move up to the main event. Now, the fight card this Saturday also contains Kyle Daukaus versus Jamie Pickett. That's your new co-main event. Jim Miller's back as he gets closer to 40 fights in the octagon. Joaquin Buckley and Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. That should be pretty exciting. Khalid Taha, he's got some heavy hands. Jessica Rose Clark, she's always pretty witty on social media. She's back. We're fans of hers as well. Gabriel Benitez. So that's what's happening next week. And I wanted to match that up with that little bit of news of Rafael Dos Anjos and Fiziev. But going back to UFC 271 goes, any final thoughts?
I think Casey O'Neill, she won the fight. You're right. I don't think it needed to be a split decision. But I think people need to pump the brakes a little bit. I think she's looked pretty good. But I think it's going to be a while before we throw her name up with the elite. You know, I think she just has to continue making improvements. But right now, she had some problems with Roxanne Modafferi herself. And this is Roxanne, she's on her way out. So I wanted to bring that up. And then I wanted to bring up Kyler Phillips. How much fun is it to watch Kyler Phillips, dude? That guy's got all kinds of energy. He comes in, he fights the type of fight that you want to watch. Keep an eye out on him.
I thought the tide might turn and Phillips would start to tire in round three, but he actually came out of the gate really hard in round three. So he's addressing those cardio issues. I'm not saying he's a gasser or anything, but you just notice there's some guys out there that can go strong for 15 minutes, and there's some that when they reach that third round, there's a little bit of a slowdown. Kyler has shown me that in the past. And I thought Rojo might have a shot, but nope, it was Kyler's night. All night he did look great. And going back to 125, I think Casey O'Neill is definitely a title contender at some point. When you close your eyes and you go, how would a fight between her and Valentina go? Nothing looks
not good
threatening to Valentina. I think Casey O'Neill would benefit from more octagon time, maybe three more fights before she takes that fight. Sometimes fighters just, they don't understand that, and it's hard to turn down when they call and go, you ready to go? Shevchenko, mm-hmm. September or August. How do you turn that down? You're right, because every fighter feels like they might have that Juliana Pena versus Amanda Nunes moment, Matt Serra versus GSP moment, whatever. And so I understand that. I get it. But I think she needs a little more seasoning. But going back to Valentina is a perfect example. Goes, she can go to a decision but still be dominant. And notice none of us really come in on a Monday and going, hey, man, she went from 120 down to 60, or she took her foot off the gas, or, she seemed vulnerable. Kind of like what we're saying here with Izzy, where she still exhibits and oozes greatness on fight night, even if she goes to a decision, or if she takes a round, she comes back and makes sure she kicks the shit out of the athlete, the opposition. Remember Jennifer Maia got that takedown mm-hmm. when they fought? And I think it was 1-1 after two. We were all going, oh, shit. And then she came back and stamped out Maia. That's, I think, what we're talking about is athletes can maybe not have a round go their way and then they come back and get the job done. Habib, same thing. He had lost to Connor, I think, in round three. I think he lost one round, and then he comes back and stamps him out in round four. So, yeah, those are kind of like the comparisons we make. The last thing, I guess, would be no Rogan. Well, no. Yeah. We'll close with Coach Tim Lane. So the last thing goes is no Joe Rogan in Houston for UFC 271. Man, I don't want the comments or people to hit me up on social media and even bring up cancel fucking culture. Let's just talk about the fact that Joe Rogan wasn't there on Saturday. Goes, were you pleased with that decision or not?
I thought it was the right decision to make for Joe Rogan and for the UFC. You know, UFC said it was Joe Rogan's decision, but with everything being so fresh, I think maybe that would have taken away a little bit from what was actually happening with the fighters and all that. So yeah, I don't see why sitting out one card, I think would probably do more good than bad. So I kind of agree with his decision to do that. And I expect them to be on the next pay-per-view. Like, I don't think this should last very long, but I understand why he did it. I think it was a good move.
And I agree with everything you just said. Dana White definitely said that Joe Rogan could have worked this night if he wanted to. So mostly, I guess it was his decision. But I think it was right for the show itself, the fighters, which are the stars that night. And I think to just let things cool off, because like I mentioned in the watch along, things like this affect a lot of people, not just Spotify, not just Joe Rogan or Neil Young or the stuff that led into India Ari and African Americans, you know, N-word stuff. He also has a family and a circle, you know, around him. And so even if you're on, I'm speaking to people that are on Team Joe Rogan, that are in support of Joe Rogan, respect his decision, because it probably took a lot out of him. He has an ability to speak. And if you've heard his podcast post all of these controversies, you can tell he's in control. He's going to be fine. But it doesn't mean that he can't affect them, or that he maybe just wants to take some time and take the spotlight off him, make sure it's on the fighters, and he'll be fine to just come in on the next show. And like Ghost said, I think I expect him to come in on the next show. So kind of just look at it that way and not worry so much about, oh, he was canceled or he was this or he was that or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying some people weren't trying to go after him. I'm just saying that think with a broad mind for some of these events that take place. And in closing, MMA related, last week we had heard about Coach Tim Lane from Extreme Couture, one of their striking coaches, a longtime member of Extreme Couture, one of the heads of the MVP program, Merging Vets and Players at Extreme Couture. He had gone missing, and this was Vegas news. It wasn't just MMA news. We had seen it through our MMA circles, but I had also seen it pop up like on some of the websites that just handle Vegas news. And so, you know, this was kind of a big deal here in Las Vegas. A man had gone missing. We found out on Friday afternoon that where his car was found, a lot of people started searching for him there, including a helicopter, which spotted, a body. Found the body, and the body was Tim Lane, and he was gone. He had died. What we're not 100% sure of, Junkie did report, based off of a video that Coach Eric Nixick said, was that he took his own life. Because out in those mountains, there are mountain lions, and then there is extreme weather as well. In the summer, people have succumbed to heat. In the winter, I guess if it gets too cold, I mean, it could be that. So we were wondering what may have happened if he just got lost, or if he physically gave out and then the elements got him. But that's what Coach Eric Nixick said. And so that's why Junkie reported it that way. But either way, the message is pretty clear. This is still pain that is being experienced by many. And so our hearts go out to family and friends. And were gutted, man. This was such a really, really nice human being.
Yeah, Randy Couture said something in the morning too that kind of, I think in within the post he wrote something like suicide sucks.
Okay, then
so
then I guess we can pretty much say that that's what it is. And either way, death sucks. Mm-hmm. But yes, in this case, this is the second time in 5 years, you know, that it's hit that gym really, really hard. And I just think that we need to go a little bit further than tell each other you love them. Reach out to people. There's a lot of things that I notice get said in when times like this. I'm not saying those aren't important or necessary, but it kind of reminds me of when there's a mass shooting and people say, you know, that the guns should only be in responsible hands, and each side takes, you know, they say something or whatever. And, you know, the first few days, these aren't conversations that should be had now because families are grieving and mourning. And then others say, well, when should we have them? Because we're not talking about them when there's not mass shooting. So I hear everybody's side, but actions speak louder than words. I would say that don't just text somebody and say, hey, you know, man, I haven't told you this in a while, but you really mean a lot to me. I love you. Or just checking in to see how you're doing. Take it a step further. Plan something. Let's go grab lunch. Let's go grab coffee. Let's go grab a beer. You know, let your actions speak louder than your words is what I'm trying to say. And maybe obviously be mean more for anybody, you know, that I guess can get lonely or whatever. But let your actions speak louder than your words, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you know, I hope Tim looks down and hears people like you and what you just said, so that he realized the effect that he had on a lot of people. That positivity was never lost. It was something that we all saw every day from him, going out of his way to say hello and to talk to you and tell you what's going on in his life. And, you know, he was one of the heads there at Merging Vets with Players. And, you know, that program is very beneficial for a lot of people that have been through a lot of things. And Tim was there to help those people. And sometimes, you know, when you absorb a lot of that, sometimes, you know, like when people are telling you their problems and all that, you may help them through it, and that's great, but you have to be careful because you can absorb a lot of that as well. The negativity that comes, you know, the emotions, you have to know how to process that, because you basically become a sponge. And that's one thing that I would tell people. You have to know how to talk to people and know your own emotions. And but man, Tim was just so great at being a spark and being such a good guy, always being active, always had something going on, and just so nice. If Tim, like, you know, sometimes when you just get frustrated and you slam your hand down on the mat or something, damn, if he did something like that, you would go, whoa, what's up, coach? You okay? You know, because he was just, he had so much energy and so much spirit that this was just so shocking. But we're definitely going to miss him. And you'll feel it. The second you walk in that gym, you will feel him missing.
Do you mind clarifying one thing for me? Because you're the one with the psychology degree. Mm-hmm. If I understood you correctly, you said, reach out to people, but make sure you're able to absorb what you may hear or see, because it may take you down. You're not discouraging people from doing it. How does one prep themselves if one's listening and goes, well, wait a minute, I also tend to get depressed and lonely, and so now could that be something that I absorb and it affects me? Maybe I shouldn't do it. Or what do you mean by that?
Just know, like, when you're going to do. So like in Tim's case, he's in a group setting with about 40 to 50 people.
I got and
40 to 50 people are telling you about their worst moments, right? And so no matter what, that kind of, it clings to you a little bit, and it probably lowers your mood for the day and kind of puts you in a place. So you have to know how to absorb those types of situations and know when to have those conversations, when not to. Kind of like what I tell you about, like, our parents sometimes focus on a little bit of the negative side. So I try not to call them in the early morning because I've noticed that that will set my tone for the day. You know, if I wake up happy and I'm like, hey, what's going on? And then you hear this and that and this and that. Next thing you know, when you hang up the phone, you may have helped them because they got it out. But guess what? Now you're left with that feeling of, oh man, I just got crushed. Like I just heard a bunch of sad shit. I woke up in a great mood. Now I'm kind of down. You know, so what other people are telling you can affect you as well. So you have to know how to absorb some of it and then how to kind of displace that, when to talk to people, when good times are to do that. And that's just for us, you know, our own personal way. The situation that Tim was in, that's a lot of people, you know, that can be tough. And everybody has their own problems.
Yeah. Okay. That's probably something we can totally dive into on another occasion, either here on Junkie Radio with others in the MMA world that are interested in this topic, or even maybe on our Patreon show, the Triple G show with Richard Hunter, which you can look for on Patreon. But yeah, we'll close with that. Rest in peace, Coach Tim Lane.
Yeah.
I know you're looking down on us, and a lot of people that you worked with or touched, whether it was a simple greeting or workouts, are going to live out your legacy. And folks, thank you for tuning into today's show. Great stuff yesterday on the watch along. We really had a blast with you all. I hope you enjoyed it, and we definitely hope to keep it going for UFC 272. So thank you for getting the word out on that, the shares, the retweets. We see them all, and that means a lot to us. And we will talk to you next Thursday. Go out there and be a champion, and I guess good luck to the damn Rams.